Welcome to my G-spot.
Hello guys, I am Stephanie Giesinger and this is my G-spot. Basically, it's a safe space that I've created to talk about the topics that are on my mind, and I bet on yours too. And each episode I have another guest and I discuss another topic, which is usually quite important in some kind of way. Bear with me. So just sit back, relax, listen, and hopefully just be open about and for the things that we talk about. And also, you know, be kind to each other, be kind to my guests, and please be kind to me. And now I'm gonna talk about my thoughts for today's episode. Die Morning Pages, meine Gedanken zu diesem Thema. At 17, I became famous. Honestly, I was still figuring out who I was. And then suddenly, everyone else already knew. Every room I entered had an idea of who I should be. Definitely someone sweet, polished, marketable. And I thought being successful just comes with not having boundaries, always being nice, being grateful for everything. So I became that kind of girl who says thank you when someone talks and walks over her. And I mean, I didn't mind it, at least not at first, because it felt like winning a golden ticket to my dream. But then the dream also came with rules. Be kind, be cute, and never complicated. And you know what? I got good at being good. So good that I forgot who I actually was. Finding my voice wasn't some glamorous rebrand. It took years of doubts, breakdowns, and rebuilding. And actually, I'm still on the journey. That is exactly what this episode is about. How to find your own rhythm, how to unlearn the rules you were once so proud to follow. And that brings me to today's guest. She is actually living a similar plot twist. She's famous, she's fabulous, and finally doing things on her own terms. You might have seen her face, you've definitely heard her voice, but today you're going to meet her. This singer and songwriter was part of the multi-platinum selling girl band, Little Mix. After having reached an incredible level of fame as a group, she's now embarking on her very own musical journey. How long did it take her to emancipate herself from her X Factor beginnings? How does she look back on her meteoric rise to fame? And what are her feelings about starting again? All for herself. Her very own thing, her very own rules, her sound, her platform. And I'm super excited to talk about it all. Welcome, Jade Thirlwall. Hello, Jade.
Hello.
Thank you so much for coming. How are you feeling today?
I'm good. I'm really excited to be back in Berlin. I always love coming to Germany. And yeah, when I got asked to do this podcast, I was super excited about it.
Yeah, I'm also super excited that you're all of a sudden sitting in front of me. I'm having your songs in my head all the time. And I'm like, I cannot start singing because it's really embarrassing.
Oh, no, please. I do it too. If I see any other artist, I start like humming their tune in front of them.
Oh, no.
So I understand. There's no judgment
okay.
here.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. And please don't judge my voice as well.
Never.
I'm not a singer. Actually, we're already in the middle of this topic. Did you always want to become a singer, or was there ever a plan B for you?
I definitely always wanted to be a singer, or like at least, you know, do music, but I definitely didn't want or understand what it meant to be famous. Like I didn't crave like being famous, you know, but I definitely, like a lot of young girls, I loved the idea of being like a pop star, you know. It was definitely a dream of mine. But yeah, I don't think I really understood what that actually meant. But I did have a plan B. I was planning on doing like a art degree if the music thing didn't work, sort of doing set designs for like theatre stages and stuff like that. But luckily, this worked out.
So you're just a very creative person, I guess, a very creative
yes.
mind.
I love any sort of creative outlet. I love to paint, I love to draw, write, obviously music, any sort of arts and craftsy stuff. Yeah, I'm always, even when I'm at home, like on a day off, I'm creating something.
It also feels like therapy to me. Mm-hmm. Also after a hard day or when I was at an event where I'm like, what the fuck is my job? I'm going home and I'm painting and I'm like, oh my God, this is actually, it makes so much sense. I can make sense of the feelings that I had, the thoughts yeah. that I'm going through. So I'm with you.
Yeah,
like creating
yeah.
something is just so close to human nature.
I think so. And I think just with like the kinds of jobs that we do, you're on your phone like all the time.
Yeah.
You have to be, you know, it's part of it. Social media is such a huge part of any success now in the creative world. So I feel like when I get home, if I'm like doing something with my hands, it means I can't have my phone on me anymore. Like I'm just creating, I'm not engaging in like a toxic amount of social media.
True.
So I find it to be, yeah, like a form of therapy or escapism from, you know, what our kind of real world is.
Yeah, same. Mm. Did you have role models growing up? And if yes, who?
Role models growing up, I think, well, I loved Diana Ross. She was like my dream artist because my mom really looked like her. And, you know, you when you're little, you want to be like just like your mom. So I really loved Motown music and I loved her. But I think as like a young, like mixed race Arab girl, there wasn't many like artists that I could look up to. I just remember always being fascinated by Princess Jasmine, but I think that's just because she was like the only princess I felt like looked like me. But I definitely always had a love and was inspired by girl bands. I think as someone that was quite introverted and shy, I always struggled to make lots of friends. And I felt like for me, a girl band embodied like sisterhood and friendship or something that I would want to achieve with other friends. And, you know, I, again, like most girls, I'm sure, growing up, you'd have your little friends around you and you'd do your dance routines and you'd show your parents.
Yeah.
And it would be really crap. But, yeah, I think I always, like, looked up to those, yeah, girl bands and artists like the Spice Girls or the Sugar Babes or Destiny's Child.
Super interesting because whilst I'm thinking about role models, I feel like I never really had role models, but I was definitely looking up to the people that I felt like I could achieve what they achieved.
Yeah.
And that's why representation is
definitely really
so important, because if you don't even think that you belong there, like if you never see a female lawyer,
yeah.
a young woman would never think like, oh, I want to become a lawyer, because this is not even something that is achievable.
Definitely. It's so true. I think from a young age, you kind of, yeah, representation is like vital to your confidence, I think.
Yeah.
Like I do always remember having a sort of complex about how I looked, just because like every magazine I'd collect or story or film I'd watch, I couldn't really see myself in them that much. And I think I've brought this up before, like ages ago, but I remember watching movies like The Princess Diaries. I'd watch these like makeover movies and I would always look like the before. You know, when you'd watch like this,
so
like Princess Diary, she's got glasses on, which I had, and she's got big, bushy, like curly hair. And that's what I looked like. And then I'd watch this movie of someone being like, you need a transformation. And that transformation would be them like taking off their glasses, getting a blow dry, you know, putting loads of makeup on and wearing like girly clothes. And for me as a young child who had that big, bushy hair, big glasses, I was always in a tracksuit. You know, for me, the representation that I would often see like in movies or in TV was like, whatever you are right now needs improving. Do you know what I mean?
So toxic. Yeah, I definitely know what you mean. And also, not only the comparison of like before and after, and also the comparisons of like the skinnier version and now like, oh my God, she gained so much weight. Who is that even?
Yeah.
Also the comparison under women, it's like, who wore it better? Or like,
yeah.
Oh yeah, who is the better artist? it's never really happening in a male realm. You know what I mean? It's always like women against women or women against themselves.
Yes.
So it was so toxic growing up in this kind of pop culture.
I think so. I think all the 90s kids... I think I did see, I can't remember where I saw it now, but I saw some sort of study that said, I think millennials have like maybe the worst confidence of any generation. I could be wrong on that, like don't quote me, but I'm pretty sure I saw that recently. And I feel like that does make sense just because of the
media.
Of the media that we grew up watching, seeing, reading. And so for me, yeah, as a 90s kid growing up in that world into the 2000s as a teenager and then at 18 being like catapulted into the limelight, I just felt like, I don't know, maybe I didn't stand a chance on the like confidence front. But so I feel like it's not until, you know, in the last, I don't know, 5 to 8 years or something that I've really learned to grow into my skin and be like super confident in who I am.
Same.
Which is lovely.
Same. Yeah. And that's the part that I love about becoming a woman and like becoming older. Before we start to talk now about your solo career, I think it's super interesting to know where you actually came from and how you got where you are today.
Yeah.
When you were 15, you started trying out for the casting show The X Factor and you tried out 3 times until you got in. What inspired you to keep trying?
I think I just knew I wanted more from my life.
Okay.
I've always been incredibly ambitious. I grew up in a very small working class, like seaside town with a, you know, a wonderful family and friends. And I didn't need more in that respect. I think I just knew I didn't want to like live there forever or, you know, stick with the boy, my boyfriend and end up with, you know, just, I don't know, just settling too soon. All that stuff kind of scared me. I knew I wanted to travel. I knew that music would be a way for me to do that if it worked out. And I used to perform a lot in my hometown, in pubs or bars, restaurants, anywhere that I could perform, I would. But obviously there's a sort of ceiling on that if it's just in your area. And I definitely didn't have the money to be able to like move to London or kind of, I couldn't afford to make that dream a reality if it wasn't for a show like X Factor. And in the UK especially, like X Factor was the oracle of talent shows. If you were on that show, if you were seen on there, you know, it really literally could change your life. So I think... Yeah, I auditioned when I was 15. I was too young and naive. I got through to like the boot camp stage, got sent home. I was devastated. And then I just thought to myself, I'm going to keep going back until they're forced to, you know, make it happen for me.
Love that. So you're like, you don't want me? Fuck it. I'm going to try again.
I would have kept going every single year, genuinely. Because, yeah, like I say, I couldn't see any other like way of making it at that time. I would send like demos into labels or tapes in, like audition after audition for various things. And yeah, I think it, you know, it was kind of a good lesson in life anyways of just constant rejection at a young age. I think... give me a tough skin ready for the X Factor. And the final year that I auditioned, I was studying in college. And for my media studies exam, the topic was the X Factor.
No.
So I'd studied the show inside out and I did this whole like essay on it and then went and auditioned. And I think because, I mean, I was only 18, but I think because I... understood the way that a show like that works, you know, it isn't just about the music, it's not just about singing, it's entertainment. You'll know this from being on a similar kind of show. You know, there's so much more to it. So I feel like I went into it the third time a bit more clued up on how it wasn't, you know, necessarily about the music and how could I navigate that. And just really lucked out by being put in a girl band to help, you know, get through it. There was obviously so many things going on behind the scenes that were just, I don't know, or if they were going on, I think I was so grateful to be there and just so hungry for it that it didn't matter. I know I could never, at this stage in my life, ever do a show like that.
Same.
Do you know what I mean?
Completely. Yeah. I was 16 when I auditioned for Germany's Next Top Model, and with 17 I won it. Mm. And whilst the show was going on, I was not really questioning. I kind of felt like it was a game, and I knew that everyone is playing in some kind of way their manipulation games. Yes. Of like questioning you.
Yeah.
And also, obviously it's different because you're from a pop. You're a pop star, and the X Factor is about singing, and Germany's Next Top Model is more about like how you look, but also the way we've been treated there, in the sense of they took every day our measurements, they wanted to see if we gained weight. We had different caterings, so the people who were working there taking the videos, the photos, they had different food than us. We only had salad, vegetables, fruits, never any carbs, and they were always telling us stories of like, you know, that girl from 2 years ago, she gained so much weight, we had to kick her out. It was so toxic.
Yeah.
But obviously I was like listening, learning, being like, okay, I'm not going to do it that way. Okay, how can I make it better? And it was just obviously the best thing that happened to me, but also kind of the worst thing. And I'm also happy that I didn't understand it back then, because I couldn't do it now.
Oh God, I just can't even begin to get into, I don't know, like there was just so much that went on in that house, like that could have been a TV show in itself. And I'm sure it will be at some point. The list is endless of dramas and shenanigans. But at the same time, I don't look back at that period of my life with like dread or upset. I think, I don't know, it was just a crazy time. And the industry is so different now to what it was. And I think like maybe even a slightly toxic part of me is grateful that I went through that, because it really toughened me up for what was to come. Like, I thought that was difficult, and then I actually came out of X Factor and entered the industry, and that was like just the beginning. Like, X Factor was the ultimate training course on navigating the limelight, and it was brutal, it was hardcore, but it did what it needed to do. And I guess me and the girls were the lucky ones in that we continued to be successful after it. And I say that because there's so many people that did that show that, you know, you get thrust into it, you think you're a star, you know, you've got millions of people watching you on TV, and then you get signed. And especially at that point in the music industry, it was so cutthroat. Like, if you didn't get a top 10, you were in trouble. So you'd come out of a show like that, you'd maybe, you know, not be as successful as you'd hoped to in the first few singles, and then you're dropped. And then what?
Then you're irrelevant.
And then you go home. And then what do? You can't just go back. Well, I guess you do go back to your 9 to 5, but that in itself is just such a like fuck up of a whirlwind of of emotions. And we were always really scared of that happening to us as well. And I guess we were just lucky in that we stood the test of time, and we got through that first hurdle of the kind of X Factor curse. And you know, we did obviously have a very strong work ethic, but I do think there's a bit of like right place, right time. I think the UK was like really craving a fun girl group at that point, and we filled that gap. And we just worked relentlessly to stay there for over a decade.
No, I feel you totally. And I've never seen it from that view of what if you are on the show, millions of people see you, and then kind of your career doesn't go like successful and you have to go back to your 9 to 5. Back then, when I applied to Germany's Next Top Model, I was in school and I was working in McDonald's to get money for my driver's license. And if I'm thinking I would have to go back, I wouldn't know how to, because obviously in school it was hell afterwards. Everyone wanted to take pictures with me, autographs. My teachers became weird. All my friends kind of also changed the way they see me.
Yeah.
It's like from one day to the other, you are another person. And yeah. not even in a negative way, because I kind of get it.
Yeah,
I
think of course.
If
yeah.
my friend was on a TV show, everybody knows mm-hmm. me or that person now when they're leaving their house. It's like, of course, you also see them with different eyes.
Yeah, yeah, you
but
do.
If you then have to go back to your normal job, that's actually really tough and not really doable.
Yeah, it's so tough. And especially if there's no sort of like aftercare for that in place of like someone checking in or, you know, I just... Yeah, it's yeah. it's hard. It's hard either way. And yeah, like you say, you understand it, because I'd be the same. If one of my mates like blew up overnight and was like this huge success or whatever, I'd be like, oh.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But yeah, so many like big life lessons were learned for me in a very short space of time at a very young age.
Yeah.
And I would maybe argue now that I think those kind of shows shouldn't allow like child stars to even be a thing.
Are the contestants now older?
Well, X Factor doesn't exist in the UK anymore. Okay. But we did do a show, and we did have younger contestants. Me and the girls, we did our own talent show called The Search, and it was with the BBC, and we made sure there were a lot more protective like methods put in place, I suppose. To like check in on all the contestants, make sure they were okay.
Sorry, who did that?
We did, me and the rest of Little Mix. We did like a talent show in the UK on the grounds that it would be everything that we felt like we were missing.
That's so cool.
And it was such a good show. It kind of fell short to COVID because it came out at the same time as all okay. that was going on. So there were a lot of things that got in the way of the show being exactly what we wanted it to be. But nevertheless, it was really, I think it was quite healing for us actually to do it and make sure that these contestants were well looked after or were genuinely enjoying the experience. You know, there was a proper level of aftercare as well after the show, if people were sent home, stuff like that. And we still stay in touch with a lot of those people now, and you know, some of them have moved on to be signed as solo artists, or they're in other groups or bands now. So that felt really special to be a part of a more like positive all-round talent show experience, which was cool. Yeah,
I can totally see how that is healing. If you're kind of going back also mentally through the other contestants now in your show to the time when you were traumatized and you can heal the other people, you kind of heal yourself. I can yeah. totally see that from that perspective. And I think it's really cool that you did that. And now looking mm-hmm. back, I'm like, should I also speak to other contestants?
You know? I don't know. I mean, I'm still in touch with a number of the people I did the X Factor with. Some of them are like family now. And again, I think when you go through such a bizarre experience with people, only those people understand what that feels like.
Yeah.
And so you lean on them for support and advice or just understanding. But yeah, like I say, that really was literally just the beginning of, you know, our whole experience in the music industry. And I think that's something that I write about a lot, especially on my own now, is that kind of turmoil or conflict of loving or living the dream but also hating parts of it too, that battle of like being grateful but being resentful of the position you're in. And I think it's such a hard topic to talk about to just anyone, because you always have that guilt of like, you know, we are in a very privileged position, we're successful.
It's not relatable.
No. And like, you know, you can't go home and like moan to your friends no. like, oh God, a terrible day at work today. You know, it's such a bizarre experience what we do.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean to say that it's not real for us or relative to us. And I think my way of coping with it is to write about it in my music in a kind of tongue-in-cheek way, because I am aware that like, for all I might moan about things or get upset about things, I am just like, you know, a gorgy little pop star on the stage. Like, it's not that serious, do you know what I mean? But, you know, I think with any job, everyone has their ups and downs. And I think when you're in the limelight, there's just, you can't, there's no off switch. You can't like unfamous yourself. You can't wake up one day and be like, okay, today I'm not famous. Yeah. I'm going to go to the shops and no one's going to know who I am. Do you know what I mean? You can't do that. So if you're having a really bad day in your personal life, it just isn't personal, is it? It's no. for everyone.
And it's like, I think that is why your newest music is really hitting the spot for me, because I can really feel it. But I also think it's funny that I'm kind of comparing my career to yours. It's really not comparable, because
it isn't in terms of that we're both, you know, doing what we do in the limelight.
Yes, but in the space of like how successful you are, and since you were 17, so you got into Little Mix when you were 17.
Yeah.
And Little Mix released 6 albums, 19 top 10 singles in the UK, became the very first girl band to ever win a Brit Award for Best British Group. I mean, intense. It's like skyrocket. So you're fame came super fast, super intense. Is there something that you wish you had more savored more along the way?
I just wish I'd like, well, I wish I'd documented more of it.
Did you not take a lot of pictures and videos?
I've never been one to like take loads, even growing up. Like there's not many childhood like videos or stuff like that. And unfortunately, anything I did have, I had on Facebook, and my Facebook got hacked.
No.
By, like, I don't know, some super fan. We think they're in Mexico.
Great.
And I can't get in touch with them, but yeah, they've logged me out of my Facebook, so I've lost all of my teenage years in
hackers.
Photo.
Hackers, please, just give us back the pictures.
If you're listening, I beg you, I don't want anything else. Just send me my cringy teenage photos and my early Little Mix memories. So yeah, I wish I'd documented more, just because so much crazy stuff happens. It's so hard to process it at the time. Like, especially in the beginning, we were flying all over the world. The work schedule was so intense, achieving all these amazing things. And it's really hard to like remember everything. So I'd say that. And then the other thing I would say would be, I think just to, I don't want to say enjoy it more, because I did enjoy it. And I do think I made the most of the majority of that experience. But yeah, I definitely had some tough times in the group, like with my own mental health, like with depression or anxiety in my like mid-20s. And sometimes I feel sad for that version of myself, because I really was at the peak of my career, touring the world, doing music that I loved. Just so much of it was a dream come true, but at times I was like the saddest that I'd ever been.
And shit.
I wish I could just like go back in time and just give her a hug and be like, you know, it'll all be fine. And I wish I could just tell her to like, just be proud of herself and keep it moving and enjoy it more. But I think that is just a tale as old as time. Like, you hear this time and time again. It's not a unique experience for artists when they're usually doing like so well. Again, it, you know, that comes at a sacrifice. So
totally. I was always crying in the airplanes, in the train, and I arrived on set and I was like switched on, performing, like, oh, everything's perfect.
Yeah.
And that went all right until COVID came and I was alone and I was like, fuck, I don't even know who I am. You know, at point I was like, I don't know who I am without my career. And that also brought me in such a deep depression. I was taking meds back then, and it really took me years of therapy to be like, actually, I'm all right now. But I also feel like maybe it is not a normal human experience to be in that age and famous. And also isn't. Social media is another whole big topic.
Yeah, it's wild.
And especially also being a woman, it's like everyone has an opinion on how you should be and you're never good enough.
No, it's never right. Yeah.
It's never right. And I actually try to please everyone, and I'm still trying to get rid of this people pleaser attitude. But right now I can really say I can give less fucks. But back then I was literally like, oh, that person wants me less sexy. Okay, I rather cover. Oh, now I'm not sexy enough and I'm going to show a little bit more leg. I was really not in my own headspace. I was just existing for other people.
Yeah.
And I think it is very much tied to me being so young in the public eye.
Yeah.
So I totally feel also your mental health journey.
Yeah.
It was a rocky road for me. And also, if I'm looking back, I'm like, I wished I enjoyed everything a little bit more, but it is hard. And it's also so unrelatable. I think a lot of people are listening now and they're like, girl, what the fuck? Like, shut it now. You know, but really, it wasn't the easiest thing to process all those things as well.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think now I look back as well, and I'm just like, actually, a lot of that was just about processing, because, like, it was so overwhelming at times. It wasn't that I wasn't loving, like, performing and stuff. Like, I love more than anything being on stage. But sometimes, yeah, I'd get on stage with the girls and we'd do the show, and that adrenaline rush would be the best feeling ever. And then, you know, I'd get a call off, like, a family member, like, if someone had passed away and I wasn't there with them, or that, like, guilt of not spending enough time with family, or, you know, these amazing things would happen, and then I'd go back to my hotel room by myself and literally just sit and, like, stare at the wall all night because I was just so, like, overwhelmed with what was going on.
So full that you're actually empty.
Yeah, yeah, I think there was a lot of that. And looking back now, I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Like, you were just definitely, like, massively overstimulated and overwhelmed by the experience, and you just didn't know how to deal with that or tell people how you felt about that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, it's four girls on the road constantly. Like, me and the girls were family. Like, we were attached to each other constantly. And I think it would be normal to not feel overwhelmed by that as well at times for all of us. But yeah, I definitely think, I actually don't have any regrets with my career. Maybe only, like, not touring the US, which I'd love to do on my own eventually. But I think one of the only things that I do regret personally is, like not being able to say no more, like, fly home when I wanted to, or, I don't know, spend more time with family, especially now that I'm in my 30s. I think I really understand now, like, how grounding and healing it is to just be around people that genuinely want the best for you or love you unconditionally. And I think I was lacking that at times. Or, like I say, if there was, like, a bereavement in the family and I hadn't been there for that happening, just the guilt that I still feel now for that, I don't think it's worth it.
But then also, why are we feeling this guilt of not being there enough? I think it is also still kind of in how women are being socialized in our society. I don't think a lot of men are feeling the guilt of not being with their family, you know?
Maybe,
what I mean?
I don't know. I mean, I can't speak for the other gender, but I don't know. I think maybe men, because they just don't actually talk about mental health as much anyways. I think maybe there's more of a barrier there and they don't realise until they mature enough to, or feel like they're supported enough to reach out to other guys to talk about it. Maybe that's a thing. Because I have seen, like, you know, we were successful alongside many other male artists or male groups. And I guess the experience was no different in that sense. But I do think that girls or women get it worse in terms of the kind of onslaught of judgment of how you look, how you're handling things, like you say, the kind of, you're over-sexualizing yourself, or you're not sexual enough, or, you know, we're seeing it with Sabrina Carpenter now, where everyone's, like, up in arms about her album cover, and I'm just like, guys,
let a girl be horny.
It's pop culture, and she's delivered what she's meant to do, because everybody's talking about it. I don't know, man, I'm here for it. I just think, as long as it's on your terms, like, who cares? Well, clearly everyone does, but yeah, I think we definitely struggled with that a lot as well, because we grew up, literally, we became women in the public eye.
Yeah.
And people voted for us on The X Factor. So I think there was always an element of, like, you belong to us and you grow up on our terms and you look how we want you to look. And I think the minute we obviously became women and started dressing more how we wanted to dress or writing songs about the things we wanted to write about, there was a lot of pushback there. And yeah, again, that's a lot to take in for young women in the public eye. And I just feel very grateful, actually, that we had each other through that to help support each other. because again, that's it's kind of not normal, is it, for everybody to ridicule how you look 24/7.
I agree. Just one little thing that I want to say. I jump really fast on that train of like, oh yeah, guys have it easier than us, and comparing like women and men. Of course, also men are not in the best position because of the patriarchy. I think we're all kind of struggling underneath that big realm. So I'm sorry if that also sounded a little bit.
Oh, I don't think you need to apologize.
Okay, good.
I just,
okay.
Do you know what it is? I just think I do think women have it harder in the public eye. I'll say that with chest 100%. Like, okay, that's not, I don't think that's a controversial statement whatsoever. I've definitely experienced that. Like, women have to work harder. You know, it's a misogynistic industry, being in, especially in music. You know, the majority of the big bosses are men. And so, you know, we definitely experienced a lot of that through the years. I think, yeah, like we've already said, like, women face more scrutiny in the public eye. So I do think women have a tougher battle. But I will say that I've had to check myself on some things, especially because I have a partner who advocates for men's mental health.
Yeah.
We have a lot of discussions about this and, you know, debates about it too. And I will say that it's like, it's been quite eye-opening for me to hear from my boyfriend, like, his experiences. He was also in a band and in the public eye and at a very young age. And it's different kinds of battles, I think, for women and men. So I don't think it's a similar journey, but there are, like, similarities in that we're all struggling. But I just think we cope in different ways, don't we?
Yeah, makes total sense. Thank you as well for catching me out.
No, not at all, not at all. Listen, I'm the same. I'm the same. But I think, yeah, I will stand on that, and I'll say that with chest, that I do think, especially for us as a girl band, you know, we were alongside a boy band who were very successful, and, you know, we could see the comparisons a lot, and the kind of, I think, just for female artists as well, you know, you look at someone like Beyoncé, who I would say is the best performer, like, of our generation, period.
Period.
Like, I think she is one of the last remaining, like just full-blown icon, legend status, like, will live on forever energy.
I'm with you.
And I think that as a woman, she's had to constantly show people that she can do everything. I don't think all male artists have to do that. I think male artists can sort of, I don't want to get any, it's so hard to talk about, isn't it? But this is, you know, this is also my experience.
It's so your opinion, it's as my well. Opinion. You're allowed to have that.
You know, like, I think if Beyoncé just stood there with a microphone, which she can because her vocals are insane and her music stands for itself, I feel like if she did that, people would have a lot more to say about it than if, like, a male artist did the equivalent. Yeah. And I know she wants to do the most because she can, but I just think it's interesting that a lot of female artists have to, like, give you full out choreography, sing a live vocal, look incredible in their costume, like, be a good performer, have stage presence, have a personality,
be a good mom,
like, juggle it all well, just all these, like, tick 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 tick, and then you're deemed an icon. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. I do think it's interesting when you look at the double standards of work ethic or effort made, especially on a live performance. That's all.
Talking about Beyoncé, when was the point when you started to think about your own solo career?
Oh my gosh. Well, I think towards the sort of end of the Little Mix journey, I think we had, like, a sort of sit down, honest discussion with each other. Like, we always said we'd want to, I don't want to say end it because it's not over officially, but end it on a high. We didn't want to wait till it drivelled out or we started hating each other, all that stuff.
Yeah,
we were like, we're doing so well that now's the time to go on a hiatus.
Clever.
Yeah. And so, you know, the feelers were out there. We had a whole plan pre-COVID of we do the tour and then we part ways for a bit. COVID got in the way of that a little bit. And so, yeah, I think during lockdown, I started to think about, okay, like, well, you know, what kind of artist would I want to be on my own? What songs do I want to write? And then when we did our final tour, I started doing like writing sessions with some close friends like Emini K, or like songwriters that I knew and loved. And I think it definitely took me the longest to like figure out who I was on my own. But I do think it's because I was genuinely so in love with Little Mix. Like, it was my life.
So you had to let it go.
Yeah, like, it was my life for over a decade. And I genuinely loved it. Like, I mean that. I know people think, oh, God, you just got to say that. Or you say that you like each other. So it's like, no, it's true. Like, the girls were my family. Mm. Little Mix was my life. It came before anything else. Like, I was so devoted to being in a pop girl band because I just loved what we stood for. I loved, you know, how talented we were. I know how hard we worked to get to where we were. So when that kind of was over, I felt like I'd, yeah, given so much to it. I'd forgotten who to just be by myself. And it was a bit like a breakup. Like, I had to sort of grieve that part of me and, you know, like any breakup, go through the motions of like feeling a bit heartbroken, feeling sad, feeling a bit of anger.
Even if it's on good terms.
Yeah, even if it's on good terms, like go traveling with my friends to forget about it. Like, I literally, the minute I got home from the tour, my diary was empty and I just sat in the flat for like, I don't know, half an hour and just sat and was like, nope. And then I messaged my friends like, should we go somewhere? So I went traveling straight away. Nice. Went on a trip with my friends. Then I flew out to my boyfriend's, wherever he was working at the time, Budapest, I think, and just made sure I was constantly busy so that I didn't have to deal with the like loss of Little Mix. And then, you know, I was in and out the studio. I pushed myself to like fly to LA on my own, find a new team, you know, a new label, management. Make sure they were all on my terms this time, because in the group we didn't really get much choice with that. When we entered the music industry, it was like, you know, sign here, 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 this is your team. So I wanted to make sure that for my own music it was very much what I wanted to do.
So did you have to meet a lot of people until you said, I like you?
Yeah, and it was scary, you know, and I'm having to like, I get quite socially anxious or a bit awkward sometimes. I do think like it was like introverted.
I can relate.
Yeah, so I was doing a lot of like, you know, meeting up with people, going hiding in the bathroom and giving myself a pep talk, like shaking. And like I have like an eye squint, especially when I'm anxious and nervous, I like can't stop doing it. So I'd get them all out and I'd be like, okay, you're a pop star. You're a superstar. Like walk in that room and like, you know, make them feel like they're lucky and, you know, deserve to have you on their roster.
I love that. No, I will do that as well.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, every time if I'm ever nervous about talking to someone, I'll just like, yeah, take myself to a little room, usually the bathroom. I literally look at myself in the mirror. I'm like, bitch, you are a superstar. You deserve to be here. You're worthy of this. Go out there and, you know,
it's like
let
affirmations,
them know.
Words of affirmations.
Affirmations are so important. And I honestly think in my solo career, anything I've achieved is because I've manifested it and I've told myself I deserve it. You know, and that it works. I think it works.
Manifesting.
Yeah, so I'd be going in all these meetings with these big, scary managers or labels and being like, this is who I am as an artist. This is why you want to sign me. And if you don't, you're going to miss out.
So it's kind of fake it till you make it, you would say?
A little bit. I mean, obviously, I believe in myself and I believed in my music. But I think, you know, I felt like I was out in the like Hollywood world, like all by myself, like just trying to start again.
Feel you.
And I think especially in places like LA, you have to fake it to make it. You have to walk in every room like you're the star, because there's so many people there that have that same energy. If you, you know, lack in confidence, they can smell that.
Yeah. And you're replaceable.
You're everyone's replaceable, all that stuff. So, you know, I had to go in every room, like with chest and be like, this is who I am. And it worked, you know, I had all these labels, like, you know, competing to sign me and all these managements that were really interested. And ultimately, well, I ended up just staying with the label I was already with. It was a good lesson learned though, because I think I saw all these like, you know, labels. I was like, okay, everyone kind of does the same thing.
So you stayed with the same label?
I stayed with RCA because, well, one, the head at the time was like super passionate about me as a songwriter and all this stuff. And honestly, like, without getting too technical, mm-hmm. I went with who I felt gave me the most like rights with my music. Okay. You know, it was the best deal, not just money-wise. You know, we negotiated like a mental health like fund in the contract, like all this okay. stuff. And so, you know, I felt that was where I was maybe most looked after. And I'm, you know, I'm proud of that decision. And with management, I did take somebody with me from the group who I felt really passionate about, and I knew that they supported me wholeheartedly. And I think that was important too, was getting that balance right of like people that are new and bringing fresh eyes and ears to my own project, but also like your day ones or your people that you know. It's not just a job to them. Like, they want to see you winning. They've got the same ambition you do. I think that's so important, to surround yourself with people that don't just clock out when the, you know, hours are over. Like, they're invested. They want to see you be as big as you deserve to be. And, you know, same with them. We grow together. So I have a lot of people in my team that I've worked with for years, and we grow together and we all have that same drive. But yeah, I've got like a whole new team of people around me too, and I think that's really cool, and it's challenged me, it's pushed me to be an even better artist. So yeah, I did that, and then I was just in the studio for like 2 years. So it took a minute, an Angel of My Dreams.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Oh God, I know, sometimes I'm like, I'll never write another Angel of My Dreams, because it was just like one of those moments. I don't know how much you believe in all this stuff, but you know, like when the stars align, or you're like
100%.
Yeah, like the morning I wrote Angel of My Dreams, I was in Los Angeles. I was really sick of writing songs. I hadn't found the first single. I was really struggling. That morning I got a call to say that the head of the label was leaving, and so I was really freaking out about that. I rang my boyfriend in tears, like, oh, what does this mean? If someone else comes in and they're not as passionate about me, like, it's going to be a nightmare. So sick of the music industry. I didn't want to go to the writing session. I was like, I'm not going. And the only reason I went was because one of my friends, Pablo Bowman, was going to be there, and I didn't want to let him down. So I thought, oh, fine, I'll go to this writing session, even though I don't want to. And then I turn up. I'm ranting to Pablo, you know, about everything and how sick I am.
And he's like, we're making a song
out
of this.
Yeah, and we're like, you know, well, maybe this is the concept. And then I was, yeah, in the room with Pablo, Mike Sabbath, who is a phenomenal artist, writer and producer. He did all of the Ray record and a bunch of other stuff. He's crazy talented, and he's a proper free spirit, so he's not tied into what, you know, a radio friendly song should be. And then I was also with Steph Jones, who is arguably one of the best pop writers out there at the moment. She did like Espresso with Sabrina and a lot of the Sabrina music. And it was just the perfect combination of like pop, experimental, me in a foul mood. And yeah, just poured our hearts into this song, Angel of My Dreams. And as you know, it's all about my sort of love-hate relationship with the music industry. And it's quite a tragic song. It, you know, it is me owning that kind of almost desperation to like be a star. There are elements of it that I think I am addicted to now, because I've been a part of it for so long. I'm like conditioned to feel like I need to stay relevant, or I need to keep getting better. And at the same time, I hate everything about it.
Yeah, it's a very toxic relationship.
It really is. And so I wanted to reflect that in The Angel of My Dreams, and kind of in this, you know, 3.5 minute song, tell my whole journey in the industry.
And you did so fucking well.
Thank you.
Honestly, it's so good. And also, I don't know how you see it, but I feel like the relationship to being in a public eye is the most toxic relationship I've ever been in and will probably ever be in. So at least your boyfriend, your partner is part of this yeah. whole experience, but my partner is not. And when I come home and I'm like, I can't do this anymore, it's so much, and tomorrow I'm flying away again and I didn't even have time to sleep and blah, blah, blah. He's like, just quit. I'm like, it's not even an option.
No.
You know, I'm like, how do you dare to talk about it that
it's
way?
It's like, what's her name? Is it Miranda? Not Miranda. In Devil Wears Prada, which is like, don't be so stupid. Everybody wants this. And it's like, it's true. Like, Jordan does the same thing. He's like, oh, should we just retire and go to Costa Rica and settle down there? And I'm like, yeah, but what if I did a gag-worthy music video next week? Like, I've got to feed the kids. Like, I love pop music with all my heart. I love being a pop star. Like, I just can't imagine not doing it. Like, for me, the goal is to be like, you know, Kylie or Madonna or Beyonce or these artists who, you know, they stand the test of time. They have such a long career. Like, I want to be prancing around in a leotard in my 50s. Like, hell yeah.
Yes,
do you know what I mean? Like,
I see that coming.
I live for it. I absolutely live and breathe pop music and being a pop star. So, you know, as much as I can moan about it and all that stuff, like, I just can't imagine not doing this for the rest of my life.
Same. So you said the stars were aligned. It
yes.
was kind of like angel of my dreams was born on this day. Did you expect it to blow up the way it did?
I don't know. I think the day it was written, me and Mike, the producer, we stayed in the studio till like 3 a.m. And we played it. When we finished all the vocals, we're like, we can't come back. Like, we've got to do it now because it feels so special. And then we finished it and we played it back and we were just like stood there in silence, like this is it. We found it. And I did. I got that like belly feeling, like, oh my God, this is it. This is special. And then I thought the label would be like, this song is crazy. There's no way this is the first single. But no, everybody was super on board with it, which was a relief. There was no battles in that sense.
Did you have to put a genre onto it? Because there is not really a genre.
I guess Angels, like, you know, at the crux of it is pop, but I guess it's like maybe a bit of hyper pop, but then I know it's kind of genre bending a little bit.
Electronic music. It's also like an homage to like your childhood.
Yeah, there's
right?
like elements of Motown in there and you know, it changes tempo. It's such a like, for me anyways, in my life, it's a once in a lifetime song. And I knew it was the first single. And I think I knew I didn't care about, obviously I wanted it to be successful, but I was more concerned about just letting people know who I was on my own. Like, that for me was the most special part about that. And so when it was released and all of a sudden, like, all these people were raving about it and the reviews were amazing and, you know, I was being sort of praised by like these critics as well as fans, all this stuff, I was like, oh wow, like, people get it, people understand who I am, and that's like the most I could ask for. And it just kept on giving. Like, it didn't need to, listen, it should have been, but it didn't need to be a number one single, because it did its job in that it opened so many doors for me. You know, I had David LaChapelle like knocking on the door wanting to do a shoot together. I had like offers in for, you know, new writers and producers, and all these opportunities came flooding in, like Angel of My Dreams.
Nominations as
Nomination, well. Nomination, like, Angel of My Dreams was that bitch. It really was.
It still is. I'm
sorry. It still is. Listen, if it's still, I'd love for, you know, you see on TikTok these songs like Snowball again, like years later, or like with Chapel with like Pink Pony Club. That was out for time and then it snowballed again. Like, my dream now for Angel is to have that second wind. It could be now, it could be a Kate Bush moment in like, you know, 10, 20 years where it like has its renaissance. But I think it opened the door for me as well, just creatively, to be like, okay, people accept the chaos. So that's why I should keep delivering. And I feel like my whole campaign has been about sort of surprising people. It's like, okay, that was Angel. Then Fantasy is a whole different kind of song. Then you've got It Girl, I mean, like Hellboy, Fuck You For Now, which again was definitely not chasing a radio hit in the UK. And now Plastic Box, which is like out this week. I feel like I've dropped a little bit of everything and they're all little parts of me. And, you know, I guess it shows, and my album shows, that all these versions of myself like coexist. And it's okay to, you know, not have a sort of rule book or definite structure to a record, especially for my first one. I literally was finding myself, so the album should sound like that. It should sound like, figuring out who I am.
So, dear listeners, you have to listen to Angel of My Dreams. If you haven't listened to it, I'm like, where are you living? What is wrong with you? But no, honestly, let's snowball it again. I totally feel you. And honestly, for the last few weeks, I was at least listening to it 5 times a day. What? And I'm not even joking. And
that's so funny.
Honestly, my partner is already like, now she's starting again. And I'm like, Angel of My Dreams. Love it.
Thank you.
Love it so much. And I think it really wins because you are so authentic in that song. And obviously, tell me if you don't want to talk about it, because I don't know how it was for you. In the first episode of Germany's Next Top Model, they chose 25 girls who would go then to Singapore. As I said, I was 17 years old, just became 17. And they were like, yeah, you can come to Singapore if you sign this contract. So I took this contract home to my parents. I was like, Mom, Dad, we have to sign this. Didn't even think about what I'm signing myself into. And basically in that contract, it said, if I may win, I will have to go to that specific management. And I was basically employed by that management.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
So, yeah, thinking back, I'm like, okay, actually a pretty fucked up situation. But I don't know if I would have changed it because it also brought me where I am right now. Yeah. Did you have a similar experience?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my parent, nobody was in the room when I signed. I was just showing.
Signing my life away.
Literally, I was like, and also I knew I wanted to be a pop star. I was like, okay, is that what it takes? Fine, I'll sign the dotted line. We all did that, you know, whether it was the accountants to the management to the label, every aspect, every contract. Like, none of us really read it. Like, we were kids. Like, we just didn't understand. And I think, you know, for our families, like, they know that as well. They know that they don't understand how it all works because they're not in the music industry.
Yeah, and my parents, they couldn't really speak German because my parents come from Siberia. And like, not even a German would understand that contract, honestly. And it's like, of course I'm going to sign it. And I'm just saying that because also in Angel of My Dreams, you're kind of referring to that. We're also, like, signing with your blood. Love the video as well, you guys. Almost 14 million views, so let's bring that up there. And you also talk about the pressure of making it. You sing, if I don't win, I'm in the bin. You say, you never knew me. Do you now feel more or less pressure as you're working as a solo artist?
I think I feel I don't know. Yes and no. I think I felt more pressure with the girls just in that, well, especially in the beginning, like I say, it was a different time in the music industry. Like, you had to be, you know, you had to be number one, you had to be in the top 10 or you were in the danger zone. So there's definitely more pressure in that sense. But I think the pressure now on my own is more like to do with, honestly, sometimes it's like keeping the fans happy or like keeping everyone engaged, because the way we are now, like with social media, there's just everything's so accessible and there's just so much music and
trends are being created on TikTok.
Oh my god. And it's like you blink and you miss it. So you drop a song, it has a moment. I was like, oh, that was really good. Okay, what's next? And you're like, okay. So then you've got to just keep it. It's like, I feel like the hamster wheel is spinning faster than it did 10 years ago because we're all just like trying to keep people engaged in our work. So I feel more pressure in that sense. And just on my own, there's more of a magnifying glass on how I look. And I've really noticed the shift, actually. Just in that, I think in the group, I was incredibly skinny, like sometimes unhealthily so. And so I think a lot of people, especially like maybe the general public, think that's just what I looked like. So now I'm healthier and I'm a bit more curvy. I'm in a better place in my life. But I think the main critique that I actually see online is about how I look, of like being fat or is she pregnant or all these like awful comments. And for the most part, it doesn't get to me. But I think the thing that gets to me the most with it is like, I'm out here and I know I'm writing great music. I'm a great performer. I work incredibly hard. And it's annoying when that's what the focus ends up being instead of like the work you're doing. Do you know what I mean? And I guess like everyone, we're all human. Like sometimes that does get to me, especially because I know my journey with my weight and that, you know, as a teenager, I had anorexia that came back, which I didn't realise until I look back now in the group. And I think now I'm in a much better place with all of that. And it's sad that it's when I'm in the most healthiest stage I've ever probably been in my life, that's when people probably pick me apart the most with how I look. And I think especially now with like Ozempic culture and all that stuff, like it's hard for me to not cave into that as someone with like a history of like eating disorders. Every day I'm battling this idea of like not caving into doing that because I know it's actually not what people want and it's not what I want, to be honest. But I think it's just the pressures of like, God, maybe it would just be easier if I did it. And then that's not to knock anyone that, you know, everyone's got their reasons for going on those sort of things. But I think for me, it's my own like inner battle with like giving in to the pressures of fame or judgment and people seeing how I look. I feel like if I was to do something like that, it's like I've let myself down. Do you know what I mean? When I've got myself to this really healthy part of my life.
For sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Thank you for opening up. And I think a lot of people can relate to that, especially young women. And also if you are in the public eye. And also, whilst we're talking about this, I also want to say in the show notes, you will find help if you are struggling with this topic. I totally get you with the weight thing, that it's like, of course, people should see and understand that you are now in a healthier physical body and also mentally in a better state.
Yeah.
But it's like people want to see something that is also unachievable to them.
Yeah.
It's so weird, right? Because in some kind of way they want relatability, like, oh, just be there eating your burger, be cute. And, you know, but then in the other way, it's like, oh, no, she is now actually not deserving the place anymore because she could be me. She also has a belly. She is now that curvy. Oh, she could be me. You know, it's so weird. This relationship also to the public eye. And I also have like some phases where I'm thinking so much about my weight and my appearance, and it's just so putting you in a box. You're putting yourself in such a tiny box where you will never fit in.
Yeah,
it's honestly devastating. And thinking about the Ozempic culture and heroin chic, how this is coming back.
Yeah, it's also background,
in the fashion industry, you know, for some time you saw different body shapes, more diversity, and now we're going back to like super skinny.
Yeah.
And it's like, what the fuck are we doing?
I know. Yeah, it's sad to think that that was just like a trend. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They were like, oh my God, this is so progressive. Like, we're really getting somewhere. And then it, because it's like not trendy anymore, it's like disappeared a little bit. But yeah, I've definitely noticed like a bit more of a shift. But again, I don't know if it is just because like with social media, we're just constantly comparing ourselves with one another. There's always someone that you think looks better than you, or I don't know, I don't know what's going on with social media at the minute. It's wild out there. Like, I can't go on Twitter anymore. Like, every time, I know it's called X, I can't ever call it
Twitter.
That. It's still Twitter.
Yeah, I feel you.
Every time I go on there, I'll come off it and feel like honestly terrible about myself. I'm like, why did I do that myself? At this point, it's self-harm because, you know, I'll go on there and the minute I see anyone saying awful things, like that will seep into my, you know, my body. And I'm like, oh God, what am I doing? Or like I'll see pictures or I'll see pictures from a performance and I'll have to check myself because I'll look at it and be like, oh my God, I look awful there. And I'm like, hang on, like, I don't even feel like that's like me thinking that. I feel like that's me looking at it from like a public lens. I don't know, it's hard to explain.
No, for sure. And it's also how we grew up. I think the understanding of success was like being skinny, being loved by everyone, earning a lot of money, being beautiful, whatever that means. And I feel like this is programmed into us, being like, this is the only way to go. And setting free from this is not a one-way street. You will actually always go back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah.
So I actually think it's also something psychological from the outside perspective, but also from the inside perspective.
Definitely, definitely. And the tea is like, whenever I was the skinniest that I was always probably the most miserable. So, like, you know, I know it doesn't bring me joy. Or, like, sometimes, again, I'll check myself. I'm like, oh, you know, maybe if I was just, like, really super stressed, I'd lose weight and that would be better. And I'm like, hang on.
So
like
toxic.
I don't need to, like, you know, work myself to the bone anymore to sort of look like that or be in that position. But, yeah, it's crazy. But, yeah, that's why I feel like, I don't know, I'm really trying more than ever to have a healthy boundary with social media, because everyone's a critic and everybody's right about their opinion, especially at the minute. We're seeing so much, like, awfulness online, like, yeah, politically and,
yes,
you know, with social issues or with what's going on in the world right now. Like, it's just, it's a lot, it's heavy. And we, as humans, I just think we're not meant to see so much
hatred
and shit. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
You know.
What do you think, what role does pop music play in a world that is attacking minority rights? Mm. And also with that, women's rights more and more each day?
I think you can't avoid it now. I feel like even if you are aware of the kind of artist that just doesn't talk on those issues, I think we're in such a tumultuous period at the minute. You've got to stand for something. Sorry, like I'm always quite outspoken with my opinions on things, and yes, sometimes that gets me in trouble, sometimes there's consequences to that, but I'd much rather, you know, stand up for what I believe in than kind of stay silent. Because I don't know, I think especially in pop culture, like, you have such a huge influence, especially on your younger fans. And I think at the least, you should be encouraging your younger fans to be, like, politically charged, or at least know what's going on in the world enough to have their voice and opinion heard.
And do you think pop music also has some kind of role? Is it an escape? Is it something that makes people think about social constructs?
I think so. I think music's very powerful, mm-hmm, in many ways. I think it can, well, you know, at the cheesiest level, it's healing. But we've seen time and time again over the years, like, how music can politically motivate or,
yes,
make a difference. And also just, like, outside of what we're going through right now, like, I felt like during COVID, like, sometimes pop music for me personally was, like, a bit of a savior. Like, if I was depressed or if I was lonely, like, music united so many people.
Yes.
Like, when Gaga's Chromatica album came out, I was like, girl, thank you. Thank you. Like, it's just what I needed at that time in my life. But then, you know, I guess that is maybe a bit more surface level. But I think right now we're seeing artists speak out about things they feel very strongly on. And some people are suffering the consequences of that. Like, we look at Kalani, who's, you know, hugely pro-Palestine and, you know, rightly so. And we've seen her gigs be pulled, and there's been, like, you know, very severe consequences for simply asking for a bit of humanity. And that's why I think more artists should be joining in on that stance, because if multiple or most artists are saying, no, this isn't okay, and we also believe in this, I think the, like, negative consequences would fade, hopefully. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. You're using definitely your platform.
Yeah.
And people trust in you, people listen to you, so yeah, why not use that?
Yeah. It is hard to navigate that. I don't necessarily judge people that are scared to do so. And I do really believe in, like, educating yourself before you put an opinion out there, because that's, you know, just as dangerous too if you're saying shit and you don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I feel like, yeah, now more than ever, it's important to show your fans where you stand on something, be that, you know, with Palestine or
Trump
or, you know, trans rights. At, yes, the minute, is for us in the UK, we're seeing, like, an awful amount of propaganda and negative press against the trans community.
Also through Trump.
Through Trump, yeah. And with us in the UK, like, there's just a lot of discourse around that. And
I didn't even know.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I think, you know, a lot of that is usually a sort of tactic to distract, I guess, from what's really going on.
What the fuck?
But for me especially, I have a lot of LGBTQ plus fans. And so I do feel like I need to be speaking out more, or, you know, showing up to the marches or signing the right petitions and showing like the trans community that I stand with them. And, you know, I'm not afraid to speak up for them too. So, yeah, it's just a bizarre, sad time right now.
Yeah, also... Yeah. Everywhere, I have the feeling, even in Germany, the right-wing party is getting stronger and stronger every year. And also now the Conservative Party is in power. And you can also see how definitely the minority rights are going down, LGBTQ, AI+, women's rights, all of that. It goes into such a weird direction where I'm like, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. I didn't think in my lifetime we will ever go back.
Like, yeah, regress, yeah.
What the hell? So, yeah, I also feel like pop music is, for me, something that is really uniting. And I was just at a festival and I really felt so belonging there because... Mm. Everyone was allowed to be who they are. And mm-hmm. it was like, you know, so empowering in that sense.
Yeah, yeah. This music performance, music events should be safe spaces for everyone, you know.
Yes.
And you're right. I think that is the beauty of that is, you know, if you're promoting that to your fans as well, you're saying, come to my show and you'll feel safe and you'll feel empowered, or like you can truly be yourself authentically. Because, yeah, the reality is that right now, that's, you know, that sense of safety or freedom is like narrowing or getting tiny bit smaller day by day. But yeah, I think you're right.
What does success actually mean to you?
I think success means to me now creative freedom. I think it means like work-life balance, which I don't think I really had until I did my solo music. Yeah, sort of spending quality time with family and friends. And I think success is, I guess, like holding your head up high on stage, knowing you're doing what's right for you and hopefully for other people.
Love that. I think I would sign it the same way for me also. Success means like knowing who you are and being confident enough to show that version of yourself to the outside world that is maybe also not be liked by everyone. So also having the courage to be disliked.
Oh, definitely.
Is kind of succession for me.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. And look, you can't always get it right anyways.
Yes. So human. We talked about your debut album, That Showbiz Baby, that is coming out this year.
Yeah.
What are you looking forward to? What can we expect from it?
I'm looking forward to performing it. Hopefully, not just in the UK.
Exactly. Yes, Germans were listening.
Absolutely. I would love to do a show in Germany, a few other European countries, the US, South America. Like, you know, I love traveling. I love seeing the fans everywhere. So that's like a dream of mine. What else? Yeah, the album, I'm just so excited for everyone to hear because it's been like 4 years in the making now. And I love it. I'm very proud of it. And yeah.
When is it coming out? Can you tell
September
us?
September the 12th, I believe.
That's my mom's birthday.
Is it really?
Yeah, it is.
Congratulations. You can give her my album.
I will.
September 12th, it comes out. I've got a few more like exciting things happening like during the summer period. Doing a few festivals, which I've been loving.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Perfect. I think we've spoken about everything. Is there anything we've missed? Is there something that you want to get off your chest?
I don't know. You know, I don't do many podcasts because I get quite nervous, like chatting one-on-one with, I don't know why.
But you're so eloquent and
smart. So are you.
So reflective. I don't know if that's an English word, but you can like reflect so well on your own being.
Yeah, I do try my best. I've tried listening to more and more podcasts to like see how it goes. My boyfriend does them all the time. He loves them. He's like, babe, you literally just talk. I'm like, oh, okay. Okay, I'll just talk, I guess. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed this. And I think you're really lovely and obviously brilliant at what you do. And it's been really nice to talk to someone that understands and has like similar journey. So thank you.
Thank you. Do you maybe have any book or series recommendations, movies recommendations for us? Anything that is inspiring you or inspired you in the past?
I mean, I love Bell Hooks. Same. I love her books.
All About Love.
All About Love. I forgot the title now, but it's about like male love as well, which I've found really interesting. What else can I say? I mean, I've been watching the latest season of The Handmaid's Tale, and it's scary. Even scarier now because I'm like, oh, we're not too far off.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've been watching that. Just trying to educate myself, like politically. I'm always trying to find the right sources to go to for like factual content. Something I would advise in general for everyone is like, go to like good news outlets too. Mm-hmm. Like go to, obviously there's so much going on in the world right now and it's incredibly draining. I do follow or look at like certain pages on Instagram, whatever, that just tell you good news. And it's quite nice to know that there are some lovely things going on as well at the minute. So I always try and balance it out. Otherwise it's like just bam, 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 like constant negativity.
Yeah.
So yeah. I would advise that to everybody.
Thank you for this recommendation. And one last little question for our community. We're calling it the G Tips.
Okay.
The G Tips. Unsere G Tips. What is your advice for young kids who are watching casting shows trying to be the next star?
Oh, wow.
What would you say?
I would say to not try and be somebody else. I think growing up, I did a lot of auditions where I was just basically like copying or being like a tribute act of another artist.
Which is fair.
Like, at a young age, you know, like I loved Amy Winehouse. So I would end up like singing like her or like doing things in her style, whatever, while I was figuring out who I was. So I would just say, try and just be you. Like whatever you are is enough. And, you know, practice does make perfect. Like, keep getting no's. Do all the castings, do all the auditions. Like, see no's as a positive thing. Every no I've been given has, like, you know, opened the door for a better yes to come. So I would say that I wouldn't look at rejection as necessarily a bad thing. You know, I feel like it's just allowing you to make way for the right thing to come along. So yeah, I would say do them all, get experience, believe in yourself, know your craft, think about or like write a list about what makes you individual, what makes you you, and tell yourself why that is so powerful.
Cute.
And yeah.
I love that. And also from my side, because I've been on a casting show, I would say, and what I actually always say to girls who are standing in front of me and they're like, I want to go to Germany's Next Top Model. Mm. Just know it's actually in first place entertainment. You can use that. Mm-hmm. Don't let you be used. You have to try and use them. And don't let you be manipulated or saying negative things about other contestants. Just try and be in the moment of knowing, okay, this is just a period of my time. Mm-hmm. Enjoy it, use the momentum, but then also don't hold on to it too much. Whatever comes out of it will be good for you.
Yes.
You know, kind of like go with everything that will happen.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Nice. Thank you so much,
lovely.
Jade. Thank you for your time. It was so lovely to speak to you. And also thank you to all of you listeners. We are everywhere where you can listen to podcasts too. Every Wednesday, there is a new episode with a different guest. So yeah, we're also on all different social media platforms. Jade is as well. Listen to her music. She is amazing. And
thank you.
So are you. We're hearing each other next week. Bye. Have a lovely day.
Welcome to my G-Spot.
G-Spot ist ein Studio Bummens Original. Executive Producer Konstantin Seinstücker und Leni Fester. Produktion und Redaktion Kate Kubel, Samuel Benke, Julia Schneider, Malou Braugmann und ich, Stefanie Giesinger. Musik Jonas Hafke, Kamera und Ton Christian Pfeiffer und Leon Waterkamp, Video Paul Ott, CGI Christine Papst, Setdesign Nina Oswald und Lilian Seben, Social Media Jessica Linder, Hanna Ackermann und Emma Holzapfel. Und die Vermarktung erfolgt durch Studio Bummens.